That was El Timbalero. I'm not sure. It's an unknown artist. I'm not sure who's on that song performing, but it's a pretty cool song. I picked it up earlier today. Right now I'm going to go over to Willie Colon with Trucutu. Enjoy. Trucutu by Willie Colon. And I'm going to go over to Willie Colon again and Hector Lavoe with Aguanile. This song has been covered so many times by so many different artists, mainly Marc Anthony. There was a movie made of Hector Lavoe called El Cantante, and we just played the song a few minutes ago for that movie. And again, this is Willie Colon and Hector Lavoe with Aguanile. Enjoy.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being with me on the air today, for taking this journey with me. I am signing off right now, and I will see you next week, same time, same place, from 4 to 6 on Wednesday. I'm your host, DJ Rosa, and this is my show, The Latin Quarters. Thank you very much. We're at 91.3 FM, WIOX Community Radio, live and local from the Catskill Mountain region of New York State. Till then, see you next week. Take care.
WIOX is supported by Freshtown Marketplace in the heart of Margaretville. Open till 9, Monday through Saturday, Sunday till 8, with everything you'd expect in a supermarket, including local and organic foods, gourmet coffees, microbrew beers and ales, and online shopping. Learn more about online shopping at foodtown.com/shopping. WIOX is supported by Roxbury Wine and Spirits on Main Street in Roxbury. Open every day except Sunday from 12 noon to 6 p.m. for contactless curbside pickup or delivery to your open vehicle trunk or hatchback. Selection of wines listed at RoxburyWineAndSpirits.com. Orders by phone or email 607-326-6200 or Jeff@RoxburyWineAndSpirits.com.
Hi, this is Artie Martello, host of the Catskills Cafe, Sunday afternoons at 2 on WIOX. I'm also the president of the Margaretville Hospital Auxiliary. There's a great need for blood donations, and so the auxiliary is holding a blood drive at the Margaretville Fire Hall on Church Street in Margaretville this Friday from 1:30 to 6:30 p.m. Walk-ins are welcome.
Hi, this is Arnie Schwartz, host of Talk of the Town, alternate Tuesday evenings from 6 to 7 on WIOX Roxbury, serving New York's Catskill region at 91.3 FM, WIOXradio.org, and MTC Cable Channel 20.
Good evening, you're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the Radio FM app. This is From the Forest, every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. We talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. Ryan's out tonight. I think he's up in the woods somewhere having a good old time. But I'm here because I'm here with Gary Mead. It's the third Wednesday of the month, and every third Wednesday we have Gary Mead on from Fruitful Furnishing Sawmill and Gary and Gary Mead Gallery in Margaretville, New York. Gary, how's it going?
Very good. How are you doing, John?
Oh, not too bad.
Good.
I love the fall. Fall's here.
Yeah, I love every season. I just about get through a season, I get tired of it, and the next one shows up
yeah
to give us more excitement.
Yeah,
we had a from spring until now had been just one awesome summer. We had more of a normal summer than we've had in quite a few years. It hasn't been super wet, and it almost got dry a couple times, but this summer was so much the same as when I was growing up on the farm that I realized I have a poem that I wrote the middle of July about, it's called Spawn Rain. I'll explain that later, but anyway, it's something that happens here in our mountains. I'm not sure many people realize, but it's a good thing. But tonight we're talking about bark, tree bark, rough. But anyway, it has so many different uses, and I think it goes unrealized. I mean, when you're spreading mulch around your plants, I'm not sure if too many people realize where that mulch comes from and the different processes that it takes to get it to them. And, I'm not much on the colored stuff with dyes and that, but, the natural bark it colors up so beautiful anyway. But they make it black and red and orange and all different colors. But, it's a natural product that comes from the bark of a tree. And it's, I use tree bark in my functional wood art. It's really quite amazing. And, I've had many experiences with it. And my first inspiration that I actually... was we were studying tulip poplar. I don't know what. We could go back in the archives.
Oh, that show must have been...
had to have been 10, 12 years ago.
No, not that far.
Well, when we first did it, maybe 10 years ago, because when I first came on the show 12 years ago, we...
Just
in 2012, years. No, 8 years ago. But in 2012, I came on, and the first... probably 2 years, all we talked about was different tree species, and I'm sure we went through, but what I had discovered that the Indians used tulip poplar bark for their longhouses. Now, we don't have tulip poplars growing in this immediate area. There might be one here or there, a couple of them, but for the most part, you get over the hill down by Kingston, right down through New Jersey and Long Island, they love water and they grow along waterways. But the bark from this tree is amazing. The Indians used it for their longhouses. It lasts 60 to 80 years outdoors untreated. So with that in mind, I'm building a house and... or preparing to build a house, and I have all these ideas, my idea book, and when we did tulip poplar, I wrote that idea down in my book. I said, check out the tulip poplar bark. It lasts 60 to 80 years outdoors untreated. And if I put an oil, one of those organic oil-based finishes on it, water-based oil, it will... outlast vinyl, and it's a natural wood product. So when I first got the idea, a few years went by, and you can only harvest bark from a tree if you're going to use it for anything in the spring of the year when the sap is flowing at the heaviest. And so I bought a bunch of tulip poplar logs, had them delivered in. I got bark spuds, they're called. I have an antique one that was handmade, made out of white oak, and it's hammered steel. It's called a beaver tail. It's a beautiful thing. And then I bought a newer one because you need two, actually, to peel the bark. And what I would do is I set these logs up on two logs going the opposite direction, so they're off the ground, and I took my chainsaw, and I just cut through the bark all the way down the length of the log. And then you start with your bark spuds. pushing and pushing, and you work it down. Most of the logs are 16 foot, but you go the whole length of the log and you just peel it. But once it gets over on the gravity side of the log, it falls off, and it just the weight of the bark will pull it off, and it becomes very easy to peel. And just have a cant hook that you keep rolling it and peeling. And so then I cut it in 52-inch lengths, and I put it on a pallet, and I stickered the bark. Because when you peel bark from a tree, it's in a round. All it wants to do is roll back up. It's a natural thing that the bark does. So what I would do is I cut it into 52-inch lengths, because I'm making siding for my house out of tulip poplar bark. And I put it on a pallet, 40 by 48, different, in every layer. I have these 13/16 by 1 inch to 1 1/4 inch wide stickers, and I put them about every 6 inches on across the bark, layered them up. Went about 48 to 50 inches high. So now I have a 40 by 48 by about 50 inch high pallet of bark. Now what do you do with that? Okay, well, I harvested about 2,000 square feet of this stuff. And I have a dry kiln. So I put it in the kiln. And I put one pallet on top of another. And then I put like a pallet of anything that weighed, a pallet that weighed at least 2,000 pounds, I would put on those pallets of bark to hold them flat while they dried. And when they came out of the kiln, I was totally amazed. You can run them through the rip saw, you can cross cut them, and I have samples in my gallery down at 1289 Southside Road. If anybody's interested in seeing it, I have a sample of I'm just making like shake shingles and layering them up. And when I actually put them on my house, as a tree at the base of the tree, the bark is always bigger. So when I put it on my house, I'm going to put the bark on like a tree. It's going to be the heavier bark at the bottom, and as we go up toward the eaves, and it's going to get smaller and smaller, like how a tree grows. And but in the gable end, see, back to the Indians again. I've learned so much about what the Indians did while they were here, just from reading about them and all the ingenious things they come up with. But anyway, the Indians on this side of the hill would use hemlock bark, which lasts 40 to 60 years outdoors untreated. And I am going to use that in the gable ends of my house, so I can have like a two-toned house without using paint. And
say that again, Gary.
I'm using hemlock bark for the gables.
And why hemlock, though?
Because Indians use it on this side of the hill.
Gotcha. Okay, now I get it.
And I want to incorporate that into my... I mean, they didn't have tulip poplars on this side of the hill.
So that's just as rot-resistant?
Not quite as rot-resistant. That will go 40 to 60 years, and it's 60 to 80 for the tulip poplar. Okay. I mean, they're both kind of rot resistant, but I figured underneath the eaves, you know, up high on the house, they'll last as long as the tulip.
Cool.
But the Museum of Natural History in Albany, they have a long house up there that is sided with hemlock and not tulip. So I think up toward, there's probably not many tulips up toward Albany, so maybe the Indians up that way probably used, they used hemlock for that. When I went and looked at that, that longhouse. I was a bit surprised with that they used hemlock, but and they didn't even mention tulip poplar in the description or anything like that with other Indians and whatever. But so that's part of my bark story. Hickory bark, I have experience with that. I actually have a dining room table in the gallery that, for the vertical pedestals, I used hickory bark. When I was harvesting my tulip poplar bark, I had a logger call me, Paul Crickon, and said, I'm up here in Wolf Hollow and Andes, and I heard you want bark. He said, we're pulling, this was in the spring, he said, we're pulling hickory out the hill, and the bark is sliding right off the logs. And he said, come on up, you can get as much as you want. Well, he called me at night. I said, well, I'm not harvesting hickory bark, but I'll come up and I'll take a look, because he sparked up some interest. So I went up to the landing, and I mean, there was a pile of bark, probably 70, 80 feet wide and about 30, 40 foot tall, and just all piled up. And I started trying to yarn, pull it out, and I couldn't get that stuff out. It was packed in there with the excavator and pushed up with a bulldozer. I said,
covered in mud, and yeah.
So Paul says, you know, while I'm up, he said, he picks a couple of logs up and he set them up on other logs, like when I peeled bark, and I brought my bark spuds with me, and you know, we peeled bark off the logs right there on the landing, and I threw them in my pickup, and I put them in my kiln. I didn't even know if I'd be able to use it for anything. But when that stuff is dry, it is, I mean, you can run over it with a two-ton truck, and it'll bounce back. It's very flexible. And when it's, like, same thing, when it's wet, it's slippery and it's hard to handle. And I put it in the kiln, and it basically rolled up into three or four circles, depending on the size of the log, while it was drying. And because that I didn't lay out flat and put stickers on it, I wanted to use it for table bases. And basically what I tried to do was keep it from rolling into itself. But while I was in the kiln, it's moved and the sticks fell out, and I've spent hours trying to, you know, I wanted just hollow bark. I wanted the 10, 12, 14 inch diameter rounds. But what happened is those sticks fell out and it rolled up inside of itself, which was a blessing, because if you take a big circle and you push on it, it's weak. But if you take the same circle and it rolls up into three circles or four circles, it's so hard. And those smaller diameters just made it extremely durable and hard. And hickory bark is very stringy. It has fibers in it. And I read stories where the Indians, they used to cut it down in the spring, use the wood for cooking and whatnot, and in their bows and arrows and stuff like that also. But anyway, they peeled the bark off, and they didn't use the bark for anything but the fibers that were in it. If you turn it around, you got the inner bark is the next layer. It's kind of half on the bark and whatnot. But they would take whatever tools they had, and they would, on the inside, they would pull on it, and these long strands, very strong string, and they would, that's what they used to sew their tents and all that together. If they didn't use rawhide, they would use, you know, bark or the string from the hickory bark.
What kind of hickory are we talking about?
This is pignut, the one that I have.
Okay.
Shag bark, I'm not familiar with that. I never harvested that, so I'm not really sure. But this was a pignut. And the first bark, hickory log that I ever debarked. It must have been in the spring. I don't remember what time of year. All I remember was the incident. And, you know, I threw this log up there because I buy mixed hardwoods, and it's just low grade. And, you know, you get a maple, a cherry, an ash, a beech, a birch, and whatever. And you know, this happened to be a hickory. So I'm my 35-horse debarker with these carbide grinders on it to peel the bark off. I'm coming down the log, and I was only about 2 foot in, and all of a sudden, the bark just peeled from one end to the other, wrapped around my pulley system, and shut that machine, stopped it. So I pushed the stop button. I'm sitting there going, what the hell just happened? You know? So I got a utility knife. I cut it all out. So now when I debark hickory, and that's that string fiber in it, it's just so amazingly strong. And but anyway, I cut it out, and from now on, when I do hickory logs or pignut hickory, I will go in 2 foot, cut a little bit, go in another 2 foot, and I'll make like a cut down into the bark, you know, several times down the log. Then I'll go back to the beginning and peel it all off. But you know, it's bark is pretty amazing stuff. It protects the tree. Some bark is actually fire resistant. That you know, some areas, you know, in order for certain stuff to grow underneath these trees, has to have fire in order to germinate the seeds. And
yeah, like pitch pine, the
yeah.
Cones and the pine cones won't open without either heat or pressure.
Right, yeah.
So a fire does it, but you don't want the seed trees to die off.
No.
And it's developed a bark thick enough that withstands a ground fire.
It's resistant to it. You know, it isn't resistant to those fires they're having out west, but it's resistant to, like you say, there's a grass fire that goes through, and it just mainly... Because the Indians used to do that all the while. It's called controlled burning. And, you know, they realized, you know, that as well. And, you know, when they burnt all the dead grass, I mean, we used to do it back on the farm. We had a field, a couple of pastures that before we plowed them up, you know, we turned pastures into meadows, basically. And before we tilled them up, we'd... set up a perimeter, and you know, we'd either disc harrow around the spot to make dirt, so when it got to where we didn't want it to burn anymore, it would hit dirt and go out. But that's basically how we took pastures over and made them into meadows. And you know, we plant corn and you know, seeds and you know, grass and clover and all that stuff. And but anyhow, back to bark. We have, like I say, I have this piece in the gallery called Hickory and a Higher Power, and I haven't met a person yet that has seen anything made with hickory bark. And but I know down south there's the Bark House that I think a few years ago I found out about them, that they actually... they buy tulip poplar bark every spring, as much as they can get, and they side houses, they do entrance ways.
Oh, yeah?
They'll peel a whole, I saw some beautiful, they do, but that's what they do, and I think they're called the Bark House.
Where are they?
They're north or South Carolina.
Huh.
And
yeah, they have a lot of tulip trees. Yep. Down that area.
And so somebody, you know, they actually started a whole business, and they have a lot of employees, and that's what they do. They do bark, but they made some entranceways where they'll just, you know, take a, you know, a whole tree. They'll peel the bark, and then they'll dry it, and then contact cement it to a flat door. And so you have this, you know, bark-looking door on your house. But they're the only ones that I ever seen use it. And I was just, you know, I heard that it lasts 6 to 8 years outdoors untreated, and that got me starting to study it, and that's why, I'll use it for siding for my house. Sounds like a very good idea. But anyway. Yeah.
In the next year, you should be able to give us a story on how it went up, right?
Yeah, yep. We're going to break ground here pretty quick, and I don't think we're going to get the frame up this year, but I'd like to do all the excavating and set the water tanks and all that and just prepare the property for the... Because I hope to have an off-the-grid gambrel house that's basically sawed. I'm sawing everything at my mill. All the wood that's going in it is not coming from anywhere but these local mountains. And the whole house frame and rafters are all going to be at local hemlock. And then I have a bunch of hardwoods that are going on the inside. And, I have some nice wide pine boards I'm going to do maybe a wall or a ceiling or something out of. But, I have all this wood that from these local mountains that I'm putting in each room. And I wrote on the bundles a year I harvested it, what mountain it came from. And I'm very excited to pull that stuff out. But the bark, that's maybe late next summer. I'm hoping to be putting that on. And right now, I just told the engineer and the carpenters just throw me up a house and put a roof on it, get it so it don't leak. I don't even want windows and doors. Just throw me up something and then just go away.
You can do the rest.
Well, I'll have help, but, they want me to plan stuff, but I don't have a plan. I compose stuff. As I see it, it happens. And
yeah, you have a vision, not a plan.
I'm not going to make a house that's going to fall down, and it's going to actually. I mean, we could probably have the worst flood ever, and this thing would float, and not come apart, and land on another continent somewhere, and somebody could move right in. Anyway, but I always want to make stuff that last 100 years or it's, what's the bother, So anyway, but there's bark on there's smooth bark and there's rough bark. I harvested some walnut bark and I can't seem to make that work for anything. I only had one walnut log and I tried drying it, and I did dry it, but, it come out, and it was kind of crumbly. It just didn't have the longevity, it seemed, of the tulip or the hickory. So I'm sure that the Indians probably tried about everything. I know they used white birch and actually black birch, and that's what they put on their canoes to keep them from leaking. And they must have used, I don't know what they must have used some kind of I'm not sure what they used to make it stick, but they used to put that bark on the outside of their canoes somewhat, the white birch, and maybe they just used the white birch log and hollowed it out. If they had tulip, they probably hollowed that out too, because that's a good light wood that's easy to carve out. And most of what the Indians did, they'd burn out the insides and then float them. But must have been something to get them balanced, because when you put something in water, you don't want it heavier on one side, front or back. It's got to be pretty well balanced.
And that's right.
They probably did a lot of tests, pull it back out, whittle and carve and do whatever. But and that birch bark is, when I'm sawing and debarking birch, especially black birch, it's just a sweet, fragrant smell that goes through the mill. It's an awesome smell, and it's very pleasant and very mild. And but underneath the bark the outside bark is the outer bark, is the inner bark, and that's actually a part of the outer bark when you peel it. And then you have the cambrium layer, which is the next layer in that goes against the sapwood. And that is, I mean, it's like a 32nd of an inch thick. It's not very thick, but that's a lifeline to that tree. And if you ever heard the term girdling, that's basically killing a tree, because you cut with a chainsaw the full circle around the tree at the bottom. You know, most people, when they girdle, they cut a half inch to an inch in, separating the cambrium layer from the rest of the tree, and it will die, standing dead. They did that to a lot of beech nuts up in New Kingston. The neighbors did. We never did, because we heated with wood, and, you know, we used the beeches for firewood, and we, you know, when they were diseased, they have the beech bark disease, which is actually makes pretty lumber. I have some pieces out of that in the gallery too. That,
oh yeah, what's it?
It looks like bark? Leopard skin. It's all spotty, and I mean, it's
so that's just got to be towards the top of the log at the outside.
That's
the
outside of the log. Yeah,
that first cut.
Second cut. You can,
yeah,
because beech nut bark is very thin, and you don't have to take much of that off, because when I debark them, the ones I made stuff out of, when I debarked them, I just barely touched it, you know, the bark, because I wanted to save that and get that, but, you know, I would get a good 5/4 board out of the first cut. It was like, it would actually normally be called the slab, and I go down and, you know, you didn't get very wide boards, but you got the character in it. And I always thought, I don't know, I find beauty in ugliness, and other people see ugliness. I see much beauty. I see, I guess because I'm a mutt. I don't know why that is, but, you know, I'm a mixed breed. And, you know, I've always been a three common board. So anyway, you know, all kinds of defects. But, you know, some of that is, I mean, a lot of the stuff that is in the commercial end of logging, they wouldn't even take a, you know, it goes into whatever I actually see beauty in, goes into firewood or something else, because in the commercial end of it, there is such a high volume of production that if this log comes through that isn't selecting better and has all these wonderful qualities for building cabinets and doing floors and all that, it gets kicked to the side and don't even make it to the mill. Actually, the loggers, it all goes into firewood. It don't even make it to the mill. But anyway, there's a lot of beautiful stuff out there. I mean, especially now when, you know, it's hard to go out in the public and, you know, be comfortable and all that. Just go out in the woods. There's no virus out there. It's a beautiful place to be these days. So frequently take walks and start noticing, you know, the bark of a tree. And you'll see, notice cherry. Cherry is the darkest bark in the woods. And, you know, when I had scouts, I would always, wherever we went in a car, whatever scouts were in my truck with me and on the way to the campery, and then when we got there and or up the camp or whatever, we'd be walking on a trail, and I'd say, you know what kind of tree that is? You know, that was like my daily regiment, because I grew up not knowing too many trees, but when I started getting interested in them, you know, you just teach yourself, and you go out and you look and say, oh, so, you know, because basswood looks like ash and ash vice versa, and, you know, black walnut and a lot of the oaks look similar, and but there's these slightly little different things. And there's so many different oaks that, I mean, there's oak that looks like, and now I come I found another tree on my son's property down in Gardner, and it's called cherry bark oak. Never heard of it or seen it before, but he has one on his property, and it looks like cherry bark with oak leaves on it. So, but it's not as dark as cherry. Cherry is almost black. It actually has a lot of black highlights in it. It's a dark gray to a black. And I always told my scouts, the darkest tree in the woods is most generally always a cherry tree. And one of the lightest woods in the woods, or the bark, or besides a white birch, of course, is if you see a beech nut that doesn't have the bark disease, it looks like elephant skin. It's a very pale kind of gray, and it's really beautiful. And it even has the wrinkles of an elephant skin. And black walnut, it's leathery. It looks, you know, it kind of looks almost like a leather. It has that just, but if you study these things for a while, you'll see, you know, I travel, I'm always looking at trees, and still today, and I have favorite trees that when I go by, and oh, my heart broke from it was called the Gary tree. It was it was probably at least 72 inches in diameter, and it was in Merredale, going down 28 on the way to Oneonta, right on that sharp curve. There was this huge, huge white pine that grew there for years and years, and I would always look forward to seeing it. Every time, we're going to see that white pine. Look, look, and everybody's in the car with me or truck, I'd say, it's coming, it's coming. Wait for it. We'd slow down and drive by real slow. But, you know, 72 inches is not exaggerated. It might even have been bigger. I never got out and measured it. But I went over, we're doing a show in the Hanford Mills Museum, and I brought my stuff over there a couple of weeks ago to put on display, and somebody cut it down. And I teared up because I miss it now, and I can't believe it's gone. It wasn't unhealthy, and I'm not sure why they even took it. Maybe it was intimidating them or something, but that thing must have been 200 years old. Had to have been at least that. I can't even imagine, but the Gary tree has been cut, and actually one of my ex-girlfriends named it the Gary tree. And we've called it that ever since. And but you know, if I saw them cutting it down, I would have liked to got something from it. But you know, I don't know who cut it or why. But it was along the right of way of the state, so I don't know if the state cut it or what the heck happened to it. But probably better off not knowing. So there was enough lumber in that one tree to build a house, I would think.
This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7. We talk about a different forest-related topic. And every third Wednesday, we talk to Gary Mead. That's who's on the other end of the microphone here with us tonight on WIOX Community Radio 91.3 FM.
A song. from the Iron Ore Range across the wide Missouri, where the cool waters flow. When I got to Topeka, I looked up your name, but they said you rode off with the last rodeo. Lover, then they turn back the covers and dance the redova till the light of the dawn.
This is From the Forest. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., we talk about a different forest-related topic on WIOX 91.3 FM. And every third Wednesday, we talk to Gary Mead of Gary Mead Gallery in Margaretville and Fruitful Furnishing Sawmill. Usually pick a different tree species, but tonight we're talking bark.
Yeah.
And this and that. It's always this and that thrown in there, too.
Yeah, and this and that. Yeah, that's what makes it special.
Yeah, off the air, we were just talking about milling up giant slabs, 60 inches large or bigger or wide.
Yeah, I have a huge white pine log that I got over, and my dad found it in Treadwell, and I'm going to actually make a pantry out of it. But it's drying down. I think I've had it in my mill up in the rafters for about 4, maybe 5 years now, but I tied string around it because when the log dries, the bark falls off. But I want to, if you go to a huge white pine and just look at the bark mesmerizes you. The pattern is just so, it's amazing. They're like these different octagonal shapes just the depths and the configuration. And so what I'm hoping to do with this is, you know, the bark's trying to fall off. I have it tied on there now, but, you know, when I get to working on it, I'm going to take probably a chainsaw, because the wood shrunk and the bark's now bigger than the wood, and that's why it basically comes off. The bark don't shrink with the wood. So I'll cut the bark off and kind of label it. It's going to be very tricky to do, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to contact cement the bark back on. That's my hopes anyway. So it's yet to be done, but, you know, any other hollow log I ever worked on, the bark fell off and I got rid of it, and I enjoy the cambrium layer. The cambrium layer is very beautiful as well. It turns a nice dark amber.